It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
This is from China. Chinese Red Cross estimates that between 2,000 and 2,500 people have been killed this weekend as the army moved in to suppress the student demonstrations. Still, the army has not gained complete control. Gary Shepard reports on this weekend's bloody action in Beijing.
It was the swift and terrible ending to the Beijing spring of 1989. Hundreds of thousands of students and workers and other hopeful Chinese citizens who through their long demonstration for democracy had been seeking a peaceful dialogue with the leaders of this vast nation, received instead the harshest of responses to their demands for reform and freedom. Last night, an estimated 30,000 Chinese army troops were sent into the capital to crush what the government called a small band of hooligans and gangsters. Counter-revolutionaries, the government called them, who were attempting to overthrow the communist regime that has ruled this country for the past 40 years. It is difficult not to use the word massacre to describe what happened. The military, moving in armored vehicles, smashed through barricades that had been put up by the protesters and advanced relentlessly toward Tiananmen Square, where for the past several weeks, students had been staging a sit-in demanding the resignation of hardline Premier Li Peng and an end to widespread corruption inside the Chinese government. They fired automatic weapons into crowds of citizens who, for the most part, could fight back with nothing more than rocks and bottles. They fired their weapons even as the mobs were chanting slogans like, "You are the People's Liberation Army and we are the people." They fired their weapons into groups of demonstrators that sometimes numbered in the tens of thousands. There has been no official announcement of casualties. Student leaders claim they are staggering and that the government is attempting to cremate the bodies as quickly as possible so the true number of fatalities will never be known. Some lost their lives when armored personnel carriers and troop trucks simply ran over them. Others were gunned down as they tried to resist the savage show of force. Finally, the troops reached their objective, and in a last-ditch effort, demonstrators tossed firebombs onto the tanks and armored personnel carriers as they rolled into Tiananmen Square.
That was ABC in 1989, and I played that for you because I think it's good to go back and remember. Tiananmen Square, the massacre, they have estimated the number of people killed, and that massacre was anywhere between 180 to 10,000. No one really knows. And the Chinese are not talking and not talking about it. And all of us remember, those of us that lived long enough, remember seeing that young student hold up a flower to a big tank as the tank was rolling toward her. It was a very dramatic moment. I remember they carried an image of the Statue of Liberty. It was just really a very moving demonstration, but we saw what happened. We're going to talk about China today, and I wanted you to hear that just to put things in perspective. Many of you are too young to even know what that was about. But my next guest is not. His name is Gordon Chang, and he spent almost 2 decades living and working in China. He's written 2 books about that area of the world, The Coming Collapse of China and Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. He's briefed numerous national intelligence councils, the CIA, State Department, U.S. Strategic Command, and the Pentagon. He knows about China. Gordon Chang, does that clip take you back in time?
Well, it certainly does, and it reminds us of one of the darker periods in Chinese history. The Communist Party has never come to terms with what happened on the night of June 3rd and June 4th, and clearly right now that is always in the background. because at some point the Chinese people are going to demand that they have a greater say in how they are governed, and they are going to demand to be able to vote. They can't do that now. Things look really bad in China with Xi Jinping, the current ruler, moving back to totalitarianism, but he will not be able to prevail in the long run.
You know, the irony is, Gordon, listening to that, it actually reminded me, too, of details I had forgotten, because China sort of reinvented itself with open trade and all the influx of Chinese students and, all the products made from China. We have sort of rewritten their history, and I don't think they seem quite as ominous to Americans of all stripes because we have such short memories. But we're now seeing some new move that's taking place in colleges and universities and even in some places in grade schools that is pretty shocking. And I'm wondering if the reason it's making inroads like it is because we don't fully understand. It's the Confucius Institutes. That's what I want to talk about today. What do we see happening? What do you see happening as a man who understands China? What's going on with the implantation of these institutes on college campuses and grade schools here in America?
You know, there's slightly more than 100 Confucius Institutes on college and university campuses. There's about 500 Confucius classrooms in secondary schools. These are nominally about language instruction, but they're so much more than that. And it's part of the Communist Party's United Front Work Department to spread the message of Beijing around the world to show how democracy is failing and how China's authoritarian and totalitarian political system is superior. These Confucius Institutes, as I mentioned, do teach Chinese language, but as Christopher Wray, the FBI director, has said, they are also collecting information for Beijing. We know that they disseminate propaganda through the language materials they use about how great the Communist Party is. And the most important thing, though, is essentially college administrators, if they've got a Confucius Institute on their campus, self-censor. So they don't want to do anything that will offend Beijing because they want to make sure that they've got the flow of money from the Chinese authorities. So this is a pernicious influence in higher education and also in our classrooms as well. And Sandy, there's one more thing, and that's the Chinese Students and Scholars Association, which are on college campuses. These keep Chinese students who are on campuses in line politically. They're surveilled by the CSSA. The CSSA disseminates propaganda, and it even organizes demonstrations of Chinese students on American soil on political matters. So all of these, the Confucius Institutes, the Confucius Classrooms, and the Chinese Students and Scholars Association must be removed from the United States.
In a second, I have another guest that's going to join us, and we're going to be talking more about the nuts and bolts, the numbers, the teachers, and all of that. But I really want to know, Gordon, more from you about the motivation of the Chinese. Now, you've touched on it, but you told me last time we spoke at CPAC that China is closing off, moving more to the totalitarian communist state that we probably saw more of in 1989. And so how does this play into that? You would think that they would be withdrawing, but what do they hope to gain by a sort of propagandizing Americans on college campuses and in schools?
Well, this is part of a broad-based global effort to get Beijing's message across. And these days, especially under Xi Jinping, but also under his predecessor, Hu Jintao, they have been attacking American democracy. They've been attacking Western democracy. They've been attacking Asian democracy because they want to have a safe environment for their ugly political system. And they feel that as long as people vote for their leaders anywhere, that's a mortal threat to the Communist Party. So these Confucius Institutes are a small part of this global influence operation that is run by the Communist Party to, as they believe, protect themselves. But they're interfering in our political system. They're interfering in our educational system, and the influence is pernicious.
Gordon, you sort of have your feet in two worlds. I know you're fully American. You're very much part of our culture, but your roots are in China. You worked in, I'm sure you have a dual mind sometimes in terms of your understanding. You have more understanding because of that. Do you get frustrated with Americans and their lack of understanding of the dangers of the communist Chinese influence?
Oh, certainly, Sandy, because there has been so much optimism in the United States about the direction China would move. You know, we've seen since the Nixon administration, when he went to Beijing in 1972, you know, a real attempt to work with China, to make it a partner, to make the Chinese more like us, as people say. But what they didn't understand is essentially that the Chinese Communist Party is antithetical to the values that we hold dear. And instead of strengthening our way of life, we have strengthened the Chinese to attack us. You know, a lot of Chinese people don't agree with the Communist Party, but they don't have a say because the party has become so much more coercive in the way that it deals with its own people. And it's become much more belligerent with regard to foreigners. So we have seen, you know, essentially the same system. It was in the Soviet Union. And Ronald Reagan understood that the nature of regimes matters and that basically, you know, we're not going to be safe until the Communist Party no longer rules China.
So with the influx of these Confucius Institutes, we have even more danger. When did this start? Honestly, because Confucius, the name, we had a lot of silly cultural things here, like Confucius say, and little like caricatures that makes it almost seem unserious, but it's serious as death, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is. And these institutes are not Confucian as we understand the term. Confucius was a philosopher. Mao Zedong, the founder of the Communist Party, was deeply anti-Confucian. And, you know, we have seen, for instance, in the history of the party as it's ruled China, you know, attempts to use the Confucian label, but they're not disseminating Confucian ideas or thoughts. They're disseminating thoughts which are anti-Confucian. But this is a label which makes these institutes seem benign, but they're actually not. And we need to understand this is part of the United Front Work Department, an important part of the Communist Party, because the United Front Work Department spreads Chinese messages around the world. And so we have to understand the origin of what's going on, and we haven't. And that's why we've let so many of these institutes and classrooms and the Chinese Students and Scholars Association to penetrate American society.
You know, as badly as we speak about colleges and universities and the decisions they've made and the leftward movement lunge to the left, do you think they really, honestly, willingly understand what these institutes are about and are cooperating because they want China to implement such things on their college campuses?
Well, I think that there's really just been a number of motivations for Confucian institutes, for instance. One of them is a real desire to establish understanding with China, also a desire to get money to for language instruction. And some people have been very much leftists who support the message of the Chinese Communist Party. So there are different motivations for different people. But, you know, in general, in the United States, there has been a real attempt to integrate China into the international system so that there wouldn't be great power competition like we have seen with the rise of, for instance, the Soviet Union or the Third Reich or the Japanese militarism in the 1930s. So this was a very sort of a generous and hopeful and optimistic view on the part of the United States and policymakers. And it's only been in recent years have we seen people become much more realistic about the nature of the Communist Party. You know, we have at this moment in Beijing, the National People's Congress is meeting, and they're going to abolish term limits for the presidency.
Wow, Gordon. Yes, Gordon, listen, you and I have to talk about that again, and we will. Today, we want to concentrate on the Confucius Institutes, and I know that you have limited time. Gordon Chang, the author of Coming Collapse of China and Nuclear Showdown. Gordon, thank you for your time. We'll talk soon.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
China's People's Congress is large and largely ceremonial. But these delegates are the needed rubber stamp that Xi Jinping needs to remain president for more than two terms.
There are about 3,000 delegates to China's National People's Congress, and theoretically they can vote any way they want. But in its history, they have never vetoed a proposal by the Communist Party.
China's constitution limited presidential terms to avoid another Chairman Mao-type figure and a destabilizing cult of personality. Xi is already considered the most powerful Chinese leader since Mao. This delegate to the People's Congress told me she thinks he should be president forever.
Why do you want him to be president forever?
He does good things for the people and makes the country prosperous and strong. There is dissent online, and China's censors are working hard to quash it. They temporarily banned the use of phrases such as personality cult and my emperor, and also references to Winnie the Pooh, a character long used to mock Xi Jinping based on an apparent resemblance. One social media post showed the bear hugging a large pot of honey with the caption, "Find the thing you love and stick with it."
It's a very big deal for the Chinese people.
Isaac Stonefish is an expert on Chinese politics.
Xi Jinping is only 64 years old. As far as we know, he's in excellent health. And it really could be that China, like it had in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, now has a dictator for life.
All right, that's a report referring to what Gordon Chang just told us. And actually, he talked to us about this at CPAC, that the Chinese are moving toward a closed-off society. Gordon talked about earlier about how they want to do away with the American dollar and develop currency around, to beef up their own currency so that they actually are takeover power in every way, whether it's military or economic. And so now we know that they're moving into our colleges and universities in the form of Confucius Institutes. It sounds so innocuous. It also, if you're not clued in, may even sound humorous, but there's nothing funny about it. Rochelle Peterson is with the National Association of Scholars. And the National Association of Scholars is a consortium, I would say, of all kinds of conservative thinkers around the country, former professors, current professors, academics of all stripes, and then some of us that are just interested in intellectual pursuits and trying to increase our knowledge who happen to be conservative. And so the National Association of Scholars has been following this very, very carefully. They just released a report, which I discussed a few months ago with them, called Outsourced to China, Confucius Institutes and Soft Power in American Higher Education. And Rochelle Peterson has been the point person on this project, and she joins us this morning. Rochelle, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Now, we already talked to Gordon a little bit. We just really just touched on actually what Confucius Institutes are. But so lay the groundwork again to help us understand exactly what are these things? What are they trying to do? Are they separate buildings? Are they whole curriculums? You know, how is this working?
So they are centers based on American colleges and universities, as well as universities in other countries, sponsored directly by the Chinese government. China sends over textbooks that have been pre-approved by the Chinese government. They send over teachers who were vetted, hired, and trained in China. And they send over operating funds to run these Confucius Institutes that teach classes on Chinese language and culture and other issues related to China on colleges and universities. These are not separate buildings where the classes are just open to the public, not for credit. Frequently, they're offered for credit to students at American colleges right now.
So how many colleges are doing something? This sounds unique, interesting. I mean, it sounds like something I might have signed up for. How many colleges are participating in this?
There are about 105 in the U.S., and then China also operates a K-12 version called Confucius Classrooms at about 500 American schools.
Now, what does that mean exactly? Does that mean that they have a separate classroom in the actual school itself, and these kids all day long use Confucius school curriculum? How does that work, Rochelle?
It is curriculum that is coming over from China. Usually it's like a one class a day kind of thing. But again, run directly by the Chinese government, by teachers that were selected in China, curriculum selected in China, basically just setting up shop in an American school. And the school is essentially outsourcing its classroom to a foreign government, which gives China immense amount of control over what young Americans are learning about China.
So it's not Americans who are teaching Chinese curriculum,
no.
Even. It's Chinese loyalists, I guess native Chinese probably, who are actually teaching and believing the propaganda that they're teaching and teaching it with a purpose. So
yes. China trains the teachers on how to respond to sensitive matters, and it is a requirement that they are all Chinese nationals.
How about language? Are they teaching language, or is it just... I mean, it's hard to actually understand a culture without knowing its language, but then that's a pretty big chunk to take off teaching whatever dialect they might choose to Mandarin, to college students. Are they even starting with that?
There are language classes. That is the bulk of the Confucius Institutes, as well as classes on aspects of Chinese culture. And the dangerous thing about Confucius Institutes is that it uses these seemingly innocuous classes to provide propaganda to American students who, when they're learning about Chinese language, they sometimes, their reports of singing songs about how great Chairman Mao is, or learning that the Dalai Lama is a demon, and other things that are really rewriting Chinese history and giving students the Chinese regime's official version of what China is.
You know, you would think that would be a red flag to colleges and universities already. Just, well, of course, they are drowning in a sea of lies, so what are a few more lies about China? I was thinking about Mao Zedong, Rochelle. I remember reading his biography a number of years ago. The brutality is just breathtaking. The number of people that he caused to starve, his own people, millions and millions of Chinese died under the leadership of Mao Zedong. So even if we just sat on that one lie, which is a huge one, it would be big. We started the show, though, you know, replaying that clip about Tiananmen Square. I'm sure that that's probably took place before you were paying attention to such things, Rochelle. What do we know about, for instance, what Confucius Institutes are teaching about Tiananmen?
At Confucius Institute, Tiananmen Square is just a tourist attraction. I asked a Chinese director of a Confucius Institute what she would do if a student asked about Tiananmen Square, and she said first she would try to change the subject. And if she couldn't change the subject, she would show a photograph of a modern Tiananmen Square, and she would point out the beautiful architecture. That's language that has been repeated by other Confucius Institute teachers and directors. Students in America will learn only that Tiananmen Square is a beautiful place that you can visit, not that anything important ever happened there.
You know, that's breathtaking, too. When you think of the scope of what happened on that day and the way the Chinese government has silenced it even now. And then, of course, Rochelle, there's the issue of censorship. Now, that ABC report that we played, top of the show, just hinted at it. But the censorship in China is, I don't know what the scope is. Maybe you do. Could you quantify it?
In China, it's unreal. Chinese people do not have uncensored access to the internet. There are numerous scholarly books and articles that, for all they know, do not exist. They don't appear in any search functions. And in Confucius Institute, a measure of that censorship is, in effect, as well. There's training on how to, again, avoid talking about Tiananmen Square, on how to handle Tibet and Taiwan by presenting them as undisputed territories of China, and then also pressure on American scholars to censor themselves. Even though we don't have censorship in the U.S. the way China does, Confucius Institutes are importing that censorship to colleges and universities by pressuring Americans who know that if they're being watched by Confucius Institute teachers and being reported on back to China. If they say the wrong thing, they might get on a blacklist and never get a visa to go back to China. For a scholar of Chinese history, that kills their career. If they have no access to archives and the ability to do field work, that's the end of their research career. So this is a serious threat from Confucius Institutes by monitoring American scholars.
Rochelle, we're going to get into the practical things that the National Association of Scholars is doing to fight back on this in a few minutes. But I'm assuming, maybe I'm right or wrong, that the National Association of Scholars probably tried to alert various colleges and campuses or talk to other scholars to let them know what was actually happening in these institutes. What kind of response did you get?
No response. We wrote to boards of trustees at universities with Confucius Institutes. We wrote to dozens of trustees, and I think we got three responses, all of which said, thank you, we'll look at it. And nothing further. The truth is, American administrators and trustees are turning a blind eye. They're engaging in willful ignorance because Confucius Institutes bring in a lot of money, and they don't want to lose that. They don't want to rock the boat, and they don't want to exhibit the courage and the bravery that it takes to stand up to China and do what is right.
Let's talk about the amounts of money involved here. Just give us an idea of what kind of carrots are being dangled before these universities.
For most colleges, the standard offer is $150,000 for the first year, $100,000 for subsequent years, plus the free teachers, the free textbooks, and a host of ancillary benefits such as study abroad trips in China for students, research trips for professors, and sometimes speaking tours in China for college presidents. Some universities, however, get much more from China, upwards of $1 million a year. Stanford University opened its Confucius Institute with a $4 million gift from China. And remember that the universities can charge students tuition for these classes that they are essentially getting for free from China, which adds to the financial benefit that the colleges are receiving.
So, Rochelle, help us to understand. All right, let's say a student, have they been in existence long enough that we have graduates now and kind of can see what these graduates are doing with this information that they're receiving?
The Confucius Institutes opened in 2005 in the U.S. was the first one. 2004 was the very first one ever in South Korea. So, yes, there are graduates. We haven't actually tracked them, but certainly they are graduating with a partial view of China unless they did significant research on their own time to fill in the gaps of what they did not get at the Confucius Institute.
So, in other words, a student, a business major could be a graduate, a music major could be, an art major. Anyone could probably weave this into their curriculum, but it would influence their view of China and also the communist values that are being taught to them through this curriculum that would become their own views. That's the hope of the Chinese and the dread of us, I guess. That's the way you would explain it. It would inform their views in the wrong way.
Yes, yes. Not only shaping their views, but again, also silencing American scholars who are potential critics of China. That really changes the discourse about what we hear about China if American experts are feeling pressured to not speak out about what's going on in the Chinese government.
You know, it's pretty scary. What Gordon mentioned before he departed us today, the Chinese Students Association, Rochelle, I don't know if you've, I recognize that's a little out of the conversation about Confucius Institutes, but that's frightening, and that explains a lot. You know, there are so many Chinese students on colleges and campuses. I know my husband got his law degree at the University of Illinois. We visited the campus recently, and it was awash with Chinese and Asian students. It was really stunning. So they are actually then sort of sending watchers to watch the Chinese students. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, so the Chinese Students and Scholars Association is China's way to keep an eye on the students who are studying abroad in the U.S. There's nothing wrong with having students come over from China. It's important to have a measure of cultural exchange. It's important to have Chinese students who are familiar with the U.S. and understand the way our systems work. That's not a problem. The issue is that China is monitoring them and trying to weaponize the Chinese students in the U.S. to mobilize them to act on China's preferences, to shape the U.S. discourse about China, but also to prevent these students from speaking out on the problems they may have witnessed in China before they came to the U.S. It's very alarming. It's really infringing on academic freedom. It's hindering the integrity of the American university system. And it's extremely unfair to the students who came to the U.S. perhaps hoping for a measure of freedom.
Yeah, Rochelle, we're going to continue our discussion on the other side. We want to talk about the practical things that the National Association of Scholars is doing to push back on this, what's happening on Capitol Hill, because actually some things are actually happening, and there might be some things that you could do. Let me say that Rochelle has a great article on this that was published in The Hill, Get China's Pernicious Confucius Institutes Out of U.S. Colleges. We'll post that on our Facebook page, and also NAS.org. NAS.org is a great source. You can get that study that we discussed earlier. We'll talk about it in a second again. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
We found that there has been a big change. Not so long ago, the great worries on campus were that outside forces would interfere with the freedom to teach.
Like corporations and lawmakers.
Corporations, lawmakers, sometimes boards of trustees. But the idea was that the ability to teach what you wanted to teach, to express political opinions in the right context, and to do research were threatened from without. That's changed completely. The threat now comes from the faculty members themselves and to the students that they've indoctrinated in these ideas that academic freedom is a plot by the rich white males to control what everybody else thinks. So the new idea is social justice, whereas it's sometimes put academic justice, which should trump freedom of expression. We got some pretty good clues as to what had happened. There's been a change in the politics of campus. It used to be that faculty members were roughly divided between left and right evenly. Debates took place. But as the American conservatives have been pushed out of higher education, it's become a monoculture. And if everybody agrees that we know what's right, then dissenting views are silent. I think it's going to get worse for a while. For the last 3 years, we have seen almost nonstop shoutdowns, protests, infringements of the freedom to express dissenting views of any sort. And the universities have generally responded by trying to just cover it up, to put over it excuses rather than solutions.
Peter Wood, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, that was Dr. Peter Wood, who is the head of the National Association for Scholars, and of course he's talking about academic freedom in general. That's what the National Association of Scholars is trying to restore, I guess you could say. And Rochelle Peterson is with us. She is with the National Association of Scholars. And the thing that they're bringing to our attention is another whole branch of this, and that's coming out of the Chinese government. Confucius Institutes, located on 105 institutes in the United States, they are paying colleges and universities, in some cases, up to $1 million a year. Of the mere privilege of providing curriculum, their own teachers, textbooks, while they propagandize American students. Rochelle, let's talk about the pushback. And let me ask you this. Are you the first organization that's really been speaking out about this?
No, NAS is not the first, but we are the most recent. So the American Association of University Professors pushed back against Confucius Institutes in 2014 when the University of Chicago also closed its Confucius Institute, which was a major victory for academic freedom. But since then, not a lot has been said until NAS published our study last year.
All right, and let me repeat that, by the way, that study is outsourced to China, Confucius Institutes and Soft Power in American Higher Education. And you can get that by going to NAS, that's National Association of Scholars, NAS.org/Confucius Institute. I think when it came out, Rochelle, you and I spoke about this. But since then, you guys have really whipped things up on Capitol Hill. And there are people who are getting involved. So let's talk about that. First in the Senate, what's happening?
Two senators are looking at legislation right now. One of them, Marco Rubio, has mailed a letter to the host of the host university of every Confucius Institute and Confucius classroom in his state, Florida, expressing his concerns and suggesting that they close down, which is our number one recommendation, that colleges and universities close their Confucius Institutes. And very exciting, in response to that letter, one of the five, the University of West Florida, announced that it was planning to terminate its Confucius Institute. We're still looking for their action from the other four who received the letter from Senator Rubio. We're very heartened that so far one university has seen the importance of closing down the Confucius Institute.
Yeah, that is encouraging. It just takes somebody to lead the dance or lead the party. Ted Cruz, and as I understand, now that's not legislation, that's actual action of Senator Rubio. Thank God for him doing that. But Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio now are working on legislation, is that right, in the Senate?
They are. Nothing has been introduced yet, but they are working on what exactly can be done.
All right. You know, Gordon Chang mentioned FBI Director Christopher Wray in passing earlier. So even the FBI seems to be waking up to this. Tell us about that part of it, Rochelle.
Yes. The FBI Director Christopher Wray was responding to questions from Marco Rubio in a Senate Intelligence Committee hearing. And the FBI acknowledged for the first time that it is taking investigative steps regarding Confucius Institutes. The director said they have been watching Confucius Institutes for a while. They are seeing an uptick in China's use of non-traditional collectors of information, such as people teaching on college campuses. And interestingly, FBI Director Wray noted that they're seeing this kind of collection of information taking place all across the United States, in big cities as well as in small cities. So China is really permeated the country in spreading its agents around for its own intelligence purposes.
You know, I wish I had the headlines or news stories handy that we've heard in the last few years about espionage in China, Chinese. I remember one, not that long ago, some gentleman who was working in some big national security facility was caught with all of this top secret information. We are actually watching our national secrets outsourced, really, taken, stolen. This has been happening for decades. It started, you know, Rochelle, I remember it very clearly. My understanding of the very beginning of an outbreak of this being very serious was under the Clinton administration. The Clintons, of course, literally gave the Chinese so much of our, so many of our secrets about weapons and weaponry. And I just was talking with a former executive in the aerospace industry, and they were talking about how they were sent around the world to basically give away our secrets as an effort to reach out to China and, you know, bring them into the world of ideas and bring them up to the level of the free world. I heard the same thing from an IBM executive. She said that she was asked to go and brief them on the most sensitive information that we had and was happening all over the world. We just gave away our information, and so it's coming back to. You'd think they'd have it all by now. They wouldn't have to do this, but I guess there's more to be gained. You also said that you have reported that the Government Accountability Office is also doing something. Explain that.
Yes, so the Government Accountability Office conducts studies on matters for the U.S. government and for Congress often, and Representative Chris Smith from New Jersey asked the Government Accountability Office to do a study of Confucius Institutes. They're looking at the whole breadth of what's involved, where the curriculum comes from, where the teachers come from, how these are set up, the contracts, every aspect of this. That report hopefully will be out sometime this year. And the idea is that this will give Congress additional information as it weighs potential legislative action in response to Confucius Institutes. The GAO Excellent. Did another study recently on U.S. colleges that have campuses in China and noted some of the conflicts of interest and potential dangers that are at play there, including the risk that U.S. campuses in China cave into Chinese censorship protocol, specifically on the internet, where students studying at American colleges located in China, even there, cannot access the internet.
You know, another little wrinkle on this that's just really interesting to me. Not a surprise. The potential of the theft of federal research grants is another investigation that it looks like the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology is considering. What do you know about that, Rochelle?
Well, there are cases where it's not proven, but it is alleged that Chinese professors with posts at American colleges procured research grants from the government to conduct technological research, scientific research on a host of matters. And in some cases, it appears that they stole those funds either for work that was already done in China or just didn't complete the projects or used their research and sent it back to China in a way that was not in compliance with the original contract that was signed. And one of the questions right now that the House Committee is looking at is, did China plant its Confucius Institutes specifically at colleges and universities where they know sensitive government research grants are going as a way to keep an eye on what research the federal government is funding and perhaps access that research and use it in China, the research that was sensitive and intended for the U.S. only?
I don't know. You know, I hear all of this and you wonder, how can the cat ever be put back in the bag? It's a very uphill battle for sure. But there are some things that can be done, and that's what they're looking into, and that's what you're bringing to, that's why you're bringing it to the attention of Congress per people, men and women, and also to these various agencies. And thank goodness for that, Rochelle. But let me just ask you something. I know there are other things that could be done, but I'm thinking there are there may be parents and maybe even students listening who are at that age. Maybe their kids are in college or maybe they are in college. How can they respond to this and what could they do?
First of all, check if the university where your son or daughter is attending, or if you are a college student where you are attending, check if there's a Confucius Institute on that campus. If there is, don't take classes there. You won't get an accurate view of China. And further, write to the administration expressing your concerns that the Chinese government has gotten a piece of the university, has purchased a piece of the university, and that the university is outsourcing its classroom and is inviting the Chinese government onto the university. Imagine the outcry that would happen if the U.S. government was demanding that it oversee all curriculum and train the teachers and vet the textbooks for U.S. classrooms. There would be an outcry, but that's exactly what's happening right now with the Chinese government. So there should be an outcry.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It really is. It's just yet one more outrage, but something we could do something about. You are suggesting at the federal level that I don't know if this can be done federally or not, Rochelle. Maybe this is a state issue too, that colleges should be made to choose between China's money and at least federal funding and maybe some state funding. Are you having luck making that point?
It has not been introduced into any bills yet, though a lot of people are listening to the idea. And again, we haven't seen yet the legislation that's under that's being worked on right now. But the idea is that the U.S. government provides massive amounts of funding to colleges and universities. states do as well. And if the Chinese government is offering funds to U.S. colleges, then they should have to, colleges should have to choose whether they want China's money or the U.S.'s money. If they choose to accept Confucius Institutes, then they should become ineligible for a significant portion of the federal or even state funding that they get. The idea is to make it, to make them aware of the danger and the real costliness of accepting this supposedly free gift from China.
You're also asking for financial transparency, which makes makes huge sense. That should be in place anyway. That should just be a given. But are you suggesting that colleges and universities are doing a little sleight of hand here, not being honest about what they are receiving?
Yes. We should know when foreign governments make significant gifts to colleges and universities, gifts that are large enough to potentially be procuring influence over the scholars and the administration there. The law currently requires that colleges disclose major gifts of $250,000 and above. But in the last 8 years, only 16 universities out of 100 plus with Confucius Institutes disclosed any gifts under this portion of the law. So the Department of Justice should investigate to see whether universities are out of compliance, and we should also amend the law to lower that threshold. Gifts of $250,000 and above are astronomical gifts for colleges and universities. The threshold should be closer to $50,000,
wow,
which is the average cost of hiring a
full-time Rochelle, wonderful
instructor.
The people can see why the National Association of Scholars is becoming a powerhouse and something that they should be supporting. And if you would like to check on them, it's nas.org, nas.org. Read their information on the Confucius Institutes and educate yourselves. And let's do something about this, too. Rochelle Peterson, National Association of Scholars, thank you. And this has been Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.